It's no surprise that updating the electricity grid today will make for a better tomorrow. Increased self-sufficiency is just one of the benefits. The Great Grid Upgrade will also boost the economy and create new green jobs. And best of all, you can continue doing the things you love, like watching the latest epic nature documentary or listening to this podcast while caring for the planet too. Find out more at nationalgrid.com.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Today Healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways Healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
You're listening to The Plodcast, a weekly adventure in the British countryside from BBC Country Farm magazine. I'm Fergus Collins, and I'm your host. So this is the last episode in the current series of Tales from the Landscape, and it's a really special one. It's really a tale from the deep. With Plodcast producer Jack, I joined angler and TV presenter Will Millard on a canal in Gloucestershire to search for the legendary water wolf, the mighty and mysterious pike. Would we catch one? And how would we feel if we did? Fortunately, during the recording, we had a surprise visit from Plodcast regular Annabelle Ross, who joined our quest. It turned out to be a brilliant, thought-provoking day. Now, if you've enjoyed the Plodcast, please don't forget to leave likes and positive reviews wherever you get your pods, and you can contact me and the Plodcast team and send any sound recordings of your own to editor@countryfile.com.
Will, hello. It's great to see you again.
It is good to be back, Fergus.
We are on a bigger canal this time.
We are, yeah.
We are on the... What is it? It's Gloucester Sharpness Canal. Is that what it's called?
That's right, yes. I mean, it's new to us both, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a suck it and see day, really. But it looks good. It looks really good. I mean, for what we're trying to do today, you could not ask for better conditions. And I'm saying that with a smile on my face because I'm feeling the pressure, Fergus.
Yeah, this is an interesting... There's always, with any fishing... This is a fishing trip. I mean, we're with Will. It's the perfect conditions. It's a bit windy, but we're here to catch... You've dragged me here out of Wales to catch...
Yeah. Well, hopefully, a pike. That's what we'd like to do, Fergus. Ideally, I want to see you catch your first pike today.
This is exciting. We've been promising listeners a pike fishing trip for a very long time. That's really exciting.
And yeah,
we'll have a chat about what pike are and what they do, but essentially they're a big predatory fish that lurks in these murky waters and quite scary to look at if you're not au fait with the pike.
Yeah, definitely. they are a bit. I mean, they're the apex predator of these places. You know, Aesox lucius, the water wolf, the name sort of says
wolf.
It all.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You know, it's a stealth predator. It's got a massive turn of speed. It'll ambush its prey, open this massive mouth with rows and rows and rows of backward-facing teeth. In goes the bait, and what goes in there is highly unlikely to come out. So watch your fingers, Fergus.
Yes, okay. Yeah, good. Yeah, I've still got all 10 from years of chainsawing, so I hope I don't... if a pike takes one today, I'll be so disappointed. I'll be so careful. But I would trade it for a pike.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
I'm so excited.
So. Yeah. Everything's in our favour today. You know, we've got... It's been a really cold spell and there's just been a little bit of a bump in temperatures. Mm. I think it's come up to about 9 degrees, which is nice. This wind, although it's a little bit blustery for the old sound recording, actually helps us too. I like a little bit of ripple on the water.
A little bit of chop.
Yeah, definitely. Because what we're going to be doing is running some lures through this canal. And if the pike is looking up at your lure, if there's that little bit of chop on the surface, it just helps to disguise it a little bit more. It makes it think, oh, I think that actually is more like a fish than Fergus trying to catch me. And it's much more likely to slip up. But the temperature's really good, and also we've got the wind blowing in from the west, and as the old fisherman's rhyme goes, from the west the fish bite the best.
Just
I like that rhyme.
Yeah, it's a nice light, but it's not too bright, is it?
Exactly, dull. Because they don't like bright conditions either. You know, they've got very, very dark eyes, and whenever it's really bright, they tend to just slink back. They, you know, the fish that they're trying to eat tend to see them coming, so they don't like bright conditions. So whilst this sun is handily behind that cloud over there, I think we should probably try
get
and give
some
it
lures
a go.
In. Yeah, so we're lure fishing. Are you going to tell me as we get lured up?
Yes.
I might just make us a quick cup of tea.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah. Will you have a cup of tea, Jack?
Please.
Excellent.
I've got a little box of tricks for you here.
Oh, this is exciting. So these are the... Oh, look at these. They're beautifully designed lures. So they look... like a whole range of small fish, some of the size of fish that Jack caught last time.
Huge.
And some are more sort of minnow sized. And what sort of size are you thinking then?
Well, I have not fished here before, but I've had some good intel and they've told me to go small, which is cool. So I'm thinking something a little bit probably like that would be good to start.
Okay, so that looks very like a little roach.
That's exactly right. Okay. Yeah. So this is called a replicant.
Replicating
that roach. You can see you've got the little red eye, the red fins, but it's got that lovely paddle tail as well.
Yeah, I see. So when it moves through the water, that tail is going to flash and look very enticing for a little pike. Well, big pike, we hope.
Hopefully.
Huge
we'll take
pike.
Any size, won't we?
We'll take any size, yes, we will.
But we will start with
that. I
would
be happy with a little... The small ones are called jacks, is that right?
That's right.
Jack pike.
So they're the males.
I'm looking at Jack.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Ironic, because I'm not the smallest of
No, no, you're the biggest here.
But you are sort of like pike-shaped.
Right? Yeah,
sort
true. Of
I'm quite slippery as well.
And he does have a lot of backwards-facing teeth. Yeah. Which is
that is my unique feature.
So yes, so the jacks, so they're the little, well, I would say little, but they're still, what, 2 or 3 pounds? Or
yeah, I think generally, I mean, it's not an exact science, as nothing is with angling.
No.
I think once you start getting sort of 10 pounds and over, when you know you're probably not catching male pike and you're moving into the big fish, which are the females. The females are the real big ones. You know, the great thing about fishing small lures is that you've always got a chance of catching a big one.
Just really? Okay.
Absolutely.
So that's got a big hook coming out the top of it.
Yes.
And a long shaft on that hook so that you attach the line or the link to the front of the fish.
That's right.
So it's quite a simple setup, unlike sort of float fishing, which is, you know, there's a fair amount that you need to sort of
That's it. I mean, it's a little bit. I mean, not that my fluff chucking friends appreciate this, but it's a bit like fly fishing in as much as you can ring the changes really quickly.
Yeah, okay.
You know, your lure's just on a clip with a wire trace. You must always use a wire trace because of the teeth of the pike. Mm. And then basically you can ring the changes, you know, so you don't want to get stuck on one lure all day. Sometimes different sizes make a difference, sometimes different colours make a difference, especially when you're trying to judge the clarity of the water on any given day. Sometimes you might go for something like this, which has got a bit of a rattle in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, the noise would actually, or is it create a vibration that they get attracted to?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably a bit of both. I mean, they all create vibration in the water, but I do think that the noise can make a difference.
And that's more like a sort of perchy sort of colour, I suppose.
Yeah, and then sometimes, I mean, you'll catch on things that don't look anything like a fish at all, really.
Will's got like these boxes and jars full of. It's almost like you've got a bag of fish there. It's just incredible. You've got lots of sprats and.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, there's all sorts. And we've got some spinners as well. So if all else fails, we can stick on a little spinner, which is just
those
like
metal sort of.
Yeah.
And when you say all else fails, are they sort of more guaranteed, or are they just sort of
there's no guarantees, but I always feel confident with a spinner on that you're going to hook into something.
Okay.
Very few fish will refuse a spinner, but you're more likely to catch much smaller fish, and especially perch.
Okay, well, we'll see how we go.
A chap's just nipped past here now, and he's been fishing these old lock gates down here, and he did catch a little perch down the edge there on a little spinner, so, yeah.
How exciting. Well, there's fish here. And Will, what would you normally be doing on a Friday in... Well, we're early February.
Early February on a Friday. I mean, I probably would be fishing, Fergus.
Oh, I'm glad we haven't dragged you all day from what you might be doing.
Failing that, I'd be just sat at my kitchen table like the sad little writer that I am these days on my own, looking into the
That's
middle
the
distance.
Dream. Isn't that the dream?
Exactly.
Yes, the writer's dream. Yeah. Cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Look wistfully out of the window, conjuring up words. Wordsmithery, and then, you know, a couple of hours of that, and then it's sort of back to the canal.
Back to the canal, yeah. Pick the kids up from school and then reset the next day.
That all sounds like a dream. Yeah. But we know that, you know, coming out to fish is a good escape from life's pressures.
Massively.
We talked about it last time, didn't we?
We did, yeah. And I think that I write better when I fish.
Maybe.
I tell that to my wife all the time. You know, she's like, sort of, you know, eyes roll back so far she can see her own brain. But I think I do, you know.
Yeah. Being outside, perspective, a bit of time to think, a bit of time to...
I think when I'm outside and I'm fishing, it's so all-consuming for me and so involving. It does rest my brain from constantly thinking about drawing scenes and finding words. Mm. And I think words come easier to me when I am fishing in a strange sort of way. I seem to be able to almost kind of feel my way through a phrase and be able to look at something and to be able to kind of describe it much better, much more accurately than I do when I'm just sat at home thinking about what it might look like, if that makes sense. So
I think, you know, okay.
So like the colours that you can see here, the colours of the boats, the chop on the water, even the colours of the trees and the bushes, the sky, you know, I'll start finding these sort of like nicer adjectives and way of describing the countryside in my head when I'm outside actually in it. I think that's fair to say. I don't think that's too much of a reach.
I'd agree, I totally agree with you, because I also use getting outside as a way of... I never get writer's block, but when I need to solve a problem or solve a writing conundrum, walking or just being out, I don't know, just this big space around us allows your brain to kind of expand a bit better.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And you don't have the pressures of home on your sort of, you know, the jobs that need to be done and the homework that needs to be done. And
exactly that, yeah. Exactly that. I think as well with my fishing, I don't fish for finite times or even finite fish anymore. You know, I think when I was younger, it was like I'd get down there at dawn, I'd fish all day until last knockings and it was dark, and I'd be trying to catch a specific fish in a specific way, and it was all about that target, really. Mm. Whereas now, I think because you're fishing for something else, you know, fishing to relax,
yeah,
fishing to have that break, probably a better angler, and as I've said, it makes me better at my work, better
That's
at my
really
job.
Interesting.
I think it makes me a better person as well, Fergus.
Get a bit of time. Well, we all need a bit of me time. That's the thing that we forget sometimes. Is that in the pressure, there we go. There's a lovely boat just going past. I should describe the scene here. So you've brought us to a crossroads of a canal, which is a very rare thing. But you've actually got there's four arms of the canal, and there's a lovely sort of the Junction Bridge House here, which is a beautiful old building, presumably part of the canal management infrastructure. And so it's a lively place, but hopefully underwater. Lively as well. What are the pike doing at the moment? Because we're in the middle of winter still.
Yeah, I mean, pike, when we think about pike, traditionally we do think about them as a winter species.
Yeah.
Certainly when we fish for them is in the winter. This time of year, especially with this little bounce in temperature, they're going to be on the hunt. They're going to be coming into places like this, which is where the silverfish, which ordinarily would be spread out right across this system, they're going to shoal together. They're going to be pulling together into places just like this, where there is a lot of activity, where there's a little bit of warmth. You know, you've got these boats turning around. They're going to be stirring up the silt on the bottom of the canal right now, which is going to be kicking up little bits of bloodworm and invertebrates for those fish to feed on. And if you get those silverfish condensed in one area, it doesn't take long before the pike come in behind them, you know?
Yeah.
So
who'd be a roach? So the silverfish are the roach and the bream and dace, those sort of things.
Yeah, bleak. Gudgeon is a classic canal fish that you're going to find in a place like this as well. You know, small silvery fish that, I mean,
that end up in pikes' bellies.
Not a great time, really, to be a silverfish. It's the pits of winter.
No, they're the cannon fodder.
Exactly.
They've survived the cold conditions.
Yeah.
And now they're just going to get plundered by.
Yeah.
Well, great. This is very exciting. So we could give it a go.
You ready?
Yeah, I am ready. I'm a bit nervous, but I'm ready. Yeah,
Don't be nervous. No. Do not be nervous. It will be all good. One thing I would say about this spot, you'd have to be pretty crap, Fergus, to really to lose something here. I mean, you've got quite large grass banks. I mean,
I do love a challenge.
Pressure's on now.
Right. Okay.
So I've got this lovely.
You start.
Well, I'm going to start with this other one. Yeah, you're going to start with
No, start with the smaller one. Actually, okay. I'm feeling really confident in this. Sometimes you just.
You feel fishy.
You just get a feeling, and I think this is the one. So I'm just going to clip it on for you.
It's so easy this way. You just clip on the... It's the fishing I like.
That's it, exactly.
Where you're not tying loads of knots.
Yeah, for real. And you just crack on, isn't it? You know, and it means that you can cover so much more water. Yeah. Let's tighten that clutch up in anticipation there.
Okay.
Fergus. That's about right. Okay.
So I take the arm off and just give it
Come close to the. Yeah. Come as close to the edge as you dare.
Right.
What
I
would
need to
say.
Get my sort of rhythm back. So we've got our little.
Okay. That's it.
And just give that a.
Don't be shy. Give it a welly.
Oh, I don't want to catch Jack.
That is very nice. Okay. Just, wait. Stop. Oh. Right. Let that sink down first. Okay. Let that hit the deck. Let's see how deep it is in here.
How do we know when it's hit the deck?
I'm watching your line. Either abyssally deep or incredibly shallow. I think it's probably the latter.
The latter.
Okay, slowly bring it back towards you. So with this lure, different lures do different things, but with this one, it's a swim bait is what we call. So literally, you're just slowly bringing it back towards you. You can imagine it's putting out that pulse like, oh, hello.
Oh.
You in?
No, something hit though.
That did, didn't it?
But very gentle.
You get something like that again.
Yeah, go harder.
Give it the good news, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Now, what I'm saying, that's absolutely perfect. As we get close now to the edge, I want you to always make sure today that you reel it all the way in, because the amount of pike that bite
right under
at your toes under the rod tip is extraordinary. Sometimes I'll follow it all the way, and then right at the very end, that's when they'll have it. So be really slow as you lift it out of the water, and we'll be watching behind that lure. Lift up that rod tip now, Fergus.
Yeah.
Okay. There we are.
Oh, something was on it.
Okay. Yeah. What have you got? You've got, is it some zebra mussels?
I felt that there was something.
It is some zebra mussels.
Okay, are they an invasive species? I felt there was something wobbling on the end of it.
There we are.
It just wasn't a fish.
Perch will eat those.
Yeah?
They love them, yeah.
Good. Oh, good. Something will eat those, because they are invasive, aren't they?
They are invasive, yeah.
So should I give it another go in the same sort of spot?
Definitely.
Yeah? Okay.
Nice. Let it go. So when you come to a spot like this, you sort of want to almost like fan your cast out around so that you explore the area.
That feels like it's blown quite it wouldn't be the current, it's just the line.
It's just the wind. Have you ever fished with braided line before?
No.
So the reason why it feels a bit weird and you're like, oh, is that a fish, is that not? Yeah. Braid is really sensitive. Normal monofilament line's got a lot of stretch in it.
Yeah.
So it's not quite as tactile. But with braid, there's no stretch in it, so you can feel every knock, every bounce. Here we are. Is that snagging again? Did you feel a hit that time?
Felt a hit that
yeah,
time.
Yeah, yeah. I
but
saw
just not, not
that. That looked a bit more fishy. I saw.
I should have gone a bit. Maybe I should strike this side. Here we go.
And that's come up clean. So
okay,
that's good news.
So I keep thinking you've caught little fish, but it's just the little bait.
It's just a little fish. Yeah, exactly.
How many pike have you caught in your life, Will? Would it be hundreds and hundreds?
It would be, yeah. I grew up in the Fens, and the Fens is a bit of a pike mecca in terms of, you know, places you can fish for them in Britain. So, you know, this sort of massive
drained
landscape, exactly. You know, so you've got all these big drains crisscrossing across everywhere, and just a lot of pike, and especially when I was sort of growing up, it was weird, really. It's sort of like you start fishing for your roach and you know, your perch and you catch your first sort of big bream, and then, you know, especially as a little kid, you're like, you just want to go bigger and bigger and bigger. And I remember one day, like, I'd hooked into this little roach. I was reeling it back along the surface, just about to net it, and this thing comes up from behind it, you know, just this massive black cavernous mouth, and bang, just took it straight off the line. You know, just left me with just this sort of shimmering scales just disappearing down through the water column. Oh, you snagged, or is that a fish?
Just a snag, I think. Yeah, felt very...
very lumpen.
Yeah. Just felt very...
And yeah, sure enough, that was it then. I was like, right, I want to try and catch one of those. And I remember I was probably about 8 years old, and I became obsessed and had a little spinner on, just like what I've got on now. And I'd go out all the time, just constantly
trying to get my pike.
And I remember going to bed one night and hearing a conversation between my mum and dad. And my mum said to my dad, Will's been out a lot lately. And he goes, yeah. Dad goes, yeah, he's trying to catch a pike. And then he goes, I don't think he will, though. They're probably a little bit too big for him at the moment.
Yeah.
And I can remember it was like red rag to a bull. And after that, I was like, right, come on, I've got to do it now. And yeah, I mean, I don't know how long after that it was, but...
Do you remember your first one?
Oh, massively, yeah. I was reeling the spinner up against this old reed bed, you know, winter reed bed. It all sort of dying back, looking a bit skeletal, brown. Great hiding place for a predator.
Yeah.
You know, they go in tight under the water against the reed bed, and the kind of bars of the reed bed going down through the water column against the bars of the pike.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of like russety green that you'll see sometimes with the lines on their sides, and perfect camouflage, really. I hadn't even seen the fish. It was really clear water, and I was reeling back right in front of that reed bed. It just came out of nowhere, bang, took it. And I was so surprised, I just ran back up the bank. So there was no fight whatsoever. The pike took the spinner, and then it was instantly out of the water because I just pulled it straight out. And yeah, that was my first. It was only tiny, but it meant the world to me, you know, and finally had this pike. And
yeah,
I caught it right opposite my house. So I remember just like holding it in the net in the water, and then just running inside to go and get my mum, because, you know.
Oh, so you live right by the water?
I lived on the water.
Oh, that must have been amazing as a kid.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. There's a little road outside my house, and then the river, the creek, was just right there.
Oh God, how wonderful. That's a very blessed childhood, to be near water. I mean,
it made a huge amount of difference to me. I started fishing when I was 4 years old. My granddad taught me to fish, and then he would take me out all the time. You know, I was blessed with his time, really. He was retired.
Oh, that's handy. So you had a mentor.
Yeah.
Who was your grandfather. Yeah.
Exactly.
And Kev says his mentor was his grandfather as well.
I think a lot of boys and girls growing up and getting into fishing, it was a grandparent generally that sort of showed them the initial ropes. And it's a shame today you don't see it as much as you did.
No,
when I was a kid.
Mentoring, not by parents, but by the older generation. Maybe we're having kids older, and
a lot of grandparents today are looking after young kids, you know.
Oh yes, yeah. You know? Right, I've got it right to the far bank.
That was a really nice cast.
Oh, thank you, Will.
You've got it right up into the opening of one of the arms of this crossroads on the canal. That's exactly the sort of place I'd expect a fish to be.
Is this the right speed?
Yeah, I mean, vary your speed.
Yeah,
you've got to imagine.
And jerk it a little bit occasionally.
Yeah, you can do. Yeah, I mean, these ones aren't so responsive to that. I've got ones that are called jerk baits in the bag.
No. Felt like something.
Oh, I had a knock. That was a bite.
Oh,
it's always when you're messing about in it.
That's good.
That's good.
That's a good sign.
That is good. That was something small.
Okay, I'm gonna go. Is it worth casting up here?
Go everywhere. All right, exactly. Okay.
Go along the side.
That's
here.
It. If you want to fish tight to the side as well, you get your rod tip in close like that.
Okay.
That's it. And it'll pull it in tight. And they might...
Elegant little backhand flick got that sort of like 50 yards, whereas mine's like... I'm doing like an overhead tennis serve.
You are. But the fish don't know the difference, do they?
No. Oh.
All these lures are going in the water. All right.
Probably. Try somewhere else.
Okay.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, we're getting closer,
yeah.
I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. We're ruling some places out.
We are ruling exactly that, mate. Yeah. We're in the right place.
It's an amazing bit of water because we've got a huge marina. We've got a great arm of the canal. We're water all around us. And what do you reckon? Another bit of spinning in here.
Oh, this is perfect.
Yeah.
This whole section as well. I mean, there's boats lined up either side of us as well.
Yeah.
On the inside track. And then, yeah, we've got the opening to the marina in front of us. That marina is going to be a massive fish holding area.
Yeah.
In fact, the grebe has now gone into the marina.
Yes, yeah, this is sort of, so yeah, we've discouraged him maybe.
Definitely give this a go.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to let you cast first.
Because
we're casting into the wind.
Which one do you want?
I'll go with this little one.
Sure?
Yeah, okay. It's just a bit lighter. But I'll see how I go. But
see how you go with that spinner, yeah. And then we might change up to a...
Yeah, all right. It's in, but it's not...
And yeah, don't be afraid with that spinner. Get it right in underneath that boat and stuff.
Okay.
You're always looking for signs when you're pike fishing. I mean, even in winter, there's always things to look out for.
Yeah.
That can give you indications as to where the fish might be.
Weeds there.
Sometimes you'll see fish scattering on the surface.
Oh, so that's like a pike strike.
Exactly. Yeah. There's some cormorants as well.
Yes, a pair of cormorants out there. Lots of cormorants out there. This is clearly where all the fish are, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, no. Something had definitely had a little bite there.
Do my eyes deceive me? Have we caught an Annabelle Ross?
That's Annabelle, yeah. Hello. No, we're just going a bit further down. How are you?
I'm okay.
Annabelle, meet Will. Central. Will, meet Annabelle.
How are you doing?
No,
Will.
Nice.
Will
is,
Will is
Hi,
up.
Jack,
nice to meet you.
Well, it's quite windy, isn't it?
We haven't caught a lot yet.
Nothing?
No.
We've had a few leaves.
What are you trying to get?
Pike, hopefully.
Just pike?
Well, perch, any predator. So pike, perch, there's some zander in here.
Yeah. We'll discuss lures.
We will discuss lures. Possibly bait, maybe dynamite or throwing nets.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Get our diving suits.
Diving, yeah. Victorian diving bell.
I've got swimming trunks on.
Oh, good, yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
I've got long johns.
Bathing suit.
Don't offer yourself.
Yeah.
The sacrificial one.
Jack bites Jack.
Really won't be necessary, Jack.
But good to bear in mind.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I'll put my clothes back on then.
So we're hoping you're going to bring us a bit of luck, Annabelle. Because
well,
I told Will that you're an expert fisherwoman.
I'm not an expert on canals or lures or bait. I'm a fly fisherwoman.
Oh, okay.
Well,
basically, do you want to hear my fisherman's excuse today?
Yeah.
So I felt like we had a really good opportunity, but the sun now has just come out and it's coming into midday. So it's really bright overhead, which predators don't like. They don't tend to hunt when there's bright conditions because their prey can see them when they come out of their structure to ambush them. So when it's bright, anywhere you can find that's sort of in shadow, and especially if it's combined with a bit of a feature, because canals are, you know, traditionally quite featureless, they're quite straight, the bottom's quite uniform. So if you just get something that's just a little bit different on the bank, like a little cut-in like that, you never know, something could just be sat in there waiting on ambush. And if you land its prey, this lure on its head, it's going to be quite hard for it to resist.
What's that lure imitating?
This is imitating a little roach.
Okay. It's very sweet.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. It seems a shame, really.
It does. I feel quite sad.
It's mangled inside a pike's mouth, but...
Yeah, but it's better off than the actual pike, isn't it, who's going to have a real shock?
Well, yes, but not for long. I mean, you know, these things, they crunch through bone and flesh and, you know, the amount of times I've caught, like, a pike and then popped it back in and then caught the same fish again.
Do you always put them back?
Yeah.
Do you not? Yeah, we do. Yeah, I haven't fished for ages. I've kind of gone... getting a bit too sentimental for fishing nowadays.
I'm
getting funny,
you
know.
I do know what you mean. There's much more of a conflict than there was when I was younger. I was just didn't really think too much about it. But the older I've got, I have become a bit more melancholic.
Is it age? How do you feel about killing a fish, Jack? Maybe not killing, catching, injuring and returning, being younger than us.
Oh, good question.
Does it bother you? You're like, no, let's just catch fish.
I feel a bit uneasy if it's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Which I think... I mean, I know it's going to get hurt with something sharp going for its cheek, but...
It will hurt.
If it's then being, like, ripped out or not taken out gently, I think that's when it's not good. I wouldn't ever want to kill it.
Do you know, I think the biggest change that I've seen in angling in my time, though, beyond any question, is fish welfare now. Mm. We take it really, really seriously in terms of the hooks we use, in terms of the equipment that we always carry to be able to try and remove the hooks as quickly and as safely as possible, in terms of keeping the fish in the water as much as you can during the process. But, you know, listen, it is obviously going to be a level of distressment for that fish, no matter how...
Congratulations, Fergus. Nice.
I've caught some more weed.
We've been doing very well with the weed.
This catch and release is I don't know how long it's been around for with you. With salmon, it hasn't been around for that long.
No.
And so in a way, if I am going to fish, I'd like to keep and eat what I catch. You know, that's the way to go, isn't it? If you're going to try and kill an animal, it's got to be a good reason, so you want to eat it. So that's another really complicated thing that's come up now. But when I first started fly fishing for salmon, my first salmon was on for 40 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never caught a salmon on the fly. It is something I've always wanted to do.
Yeah, it is incredible.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is incredible. It was on the Tweed.
Oh, well, I mean, there you are. So not only a fly caught salmon, you've caught it in the mecca of fly fishing.
But with pike, do they give you a good fight? Do they stay on for long?
I mean, it varies from fish to fish. Really big pike, it can be a really aggressive fight. You tend to know when it's a really big fish because it's really sluggish and dogged. It will sort of hold bottom and just move off with your bait, basically. Mm. Mm. And that's really, really exciting. The sort of jack pike, the smaller pike, they'll tend to take it and thrash around a bit. But you try to get them in fairly quickly, you know, so to preserve their energy.
Yeah.
Perch the same. I mean, like I say, it's funny. You never really know. You never really know. I've caught some really big fish that have literally just come in like a sack of spuds and then, you know, into the net and give them a little kiss and job done.
What's a big fish?
A big pike. I mean, for me, a 20-pounder.
Yeah, 20 pounds. So roughly how long is that? Because I'm not very good at working out. I was... With my salmon, they say, how many pounds was your salmon? And I'd be like, I can't even remember now what it was. But
it's about a metre and a half.
Yeah, something like that, maybe.
Is that a metre? That's a metre.
A metre.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on the girth of the fish as well.
Yeah. But a metre is a good fish.
It's massive, yeah.
Well, can you imagine it here? Also, another reason for this whole sort of course fishing is that we were talking about the sort of mindful element of it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is probably less mindful because it's a bit more active and you're kind of... But a lot of the stuff we've done on the canals, the float fishing, it's mindful. You're out there, you've got time, just a
sense of peace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And connection with the underwater world. We're not eating any of these fish.
No.
Are there many women in the carp world?
I mean, 1 in 4 rod licenses are sold to women.
Yeah.
So there is a lot.
That's good.
But, you know...
It could be better.
It could be better. I do think that fishing still suffers from that stigma of feeling quite male dominated.
Yes.
And also anglers seem quite unapproachable sometimes, that they've got their head down and they're focused on what they're doing. And that's definitely been something in the time that I've been fishing that I've tried to challenge and to try and bring as many people into the sport as possible and get them enjoying it. And in terms of women and fishing, the oldest British rod caught fishing record is held by a woman, of course.
Georgina Ballantyne.
Georgina Ballantyne, yeah. The salmon.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, incredible woman.
Okay.
She's a gillie's daughter.
Yeah.
I think that the bloke that was supposed to be going out fishing that day was too hungover. She went out instead of this absolute leviathan on the Tay in Scotland and landed it. And I remember reading
on
it
her own?
With her father gillying her. But yeah, on her own. Covered in bruises, she was by the end of it. At one point, they had to throw a stone in to get this fish to move out of the pool that it was holding in. Absolute leviathan. The pictures are extraordinary. And she said she was. They killed the fish, and it was displayed outside the local butcher. And she was stood there outside the butcher's window, and there was two old blokes looking at it. And one of them said, like, "Oh, they say a woman caught that fish." And the guy goes, "Well, that's a lie. No woman could catch a fish like that." And she's there just laughing into her sleeve behind them, being like, "I did, and it happened." You know, and that record will probably never be broken. And
do you remember what year that was?
1922. 64-pound salmon.
That's amazing.
1922. Yeah. So salmon numbers have obviously taken a bit of a dive since then. But and you just, I just don't think anyone's got anywhere near that.
Well, I think I can relate. I'm used to pulling out ones that size.
Yeah.
Well,
Jack's special.
How's that been going, Jack?
Really well. The last fishing trip, the size of them I was pulling out.
Oh, was it you who had the little two-inch long?
I think you could say little.
He has a two-inch rod.
Good size.
You were saying you think it's really important to talk about...
I think that because people, when they look at fisher folk from the outside and they feel that sort of, you know, unapproachableness, you know, it's very quick then to make assumptions about the sport and the people who are in it. I mean, I've got plenty of really close friends that don't fish, I've got close friends that really disagree with it, and I really like having those debates. And I think it's really important when you are in angling to be able to sit down and talk about them sensibly, you know, and explain what you do and why you do it.
You're not doing it today, but do you often go out with your umbrella and your chair and your thermos and your rucksack and your camouflage trousers and your, you know, there's a certain look, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, totally. I don't wear camouflage trousers. I always find that a little bit daft, but some of my friends do for sure. But yeah, no, totally.
Because that's very unapproachable. That's like, don't talk to me.
Yeah.
I'm under my umbrella.
I'm in my cave.
Yeah, I'm in my cave.
Yeah, exactly that. A couple of things there, really. Well, I mean, the first thing is that I will never begrudge someone coming up to me and having a chat, pretty much, even in my cave. The other thing as well is that the cave's important, you know. There's been a lot of research recently into particularly post-traumatic stress disorder. There's a really good study amongst combat veterans, and they found that out of all of the different hobbies that those men that were in the trials did, fishing, and that type of fishing, where they had the cave and the tent, was the most therapeutic for them, because they had their safe space that they knew they could retreat into, but still be out in nature, but have that comfort of a place where they knew was unequivocally safe. And the difference that it's made in a lot of people's mental health has been huge.
Especially with veterans with PTSD.
Particularly with veterans with PTSD, or particularly with people with PTSD.
Yeah.
But it was combat veterans at the study initially.
Initially
came from Dr. Mark Wheeler. I think as well, the other thing is because there's a lot of technical process to fishing, you know, it all looks quite complicated. That puts people off as well. You kind of don't really know where to start. But, you know, there's so many wonderful local tackle shops, local clubs as well now. We're crying out for beginners.
Are you?
Absolutely.
Why? Because you
license
want to...
sales are going down, to be frank.
Does the license contribute to the upkeep of the area? And is that why? It's part of the conservation of the...
Massively. I mean, certainly a lot of the places where I fish now, the anglers have put an enormous amount back into the waterways that they fish, in terms of restocking programs, in terms of rewilding, habitat development, removing old barriers. You know, some of the rivers where I fish, the anglers have gone in there and they've been instrumental in the removal of the weirs, you know, things that were blocking migrating species like
the
salmon.
Oh yeah, so the eels can go up.
The eels, the sea lamprey, pursuing the sea trout, you know, all of these things were unable to complete their journey.
Yeah, the River Wye is a whole other topic because of the pollution, isn't it?
Yes.
So can you fish there now?
Yeah, I was there last week, actually.
Are the fish
contaminated? No, the fish aren't contaminated, but it's unquestionably damaged the river. There's no two ways about that. The biggest issue with what's happened there is the invertebrate life, which obviously is the bottom of the food web, and everything comes up from the smallest organisms. It holds the whole place together. There's been a crash. Generally, there's been a crash in fresh invertebrate life, but one of the biggest things that happened in the Wye was the disappearance of the water crow's foot, you know, the ranunculus weed. And that was nuts, man. Like, it felt like it almost disappeared overnight.
So that's the bottom of the food chain?
No, so this is the weed that holds the insects in it.
Yeah, and but they don't eat it, they live in it.
Yeah, they live in it. So, I mean, and the Wye was famous for that. You'd see these, like, huge waving beds of green. And, yeah, the pollution incidents there, it's just killed it all off.
But I think our waterways would be in a much worse state if it wasn't for the action. And the joy that it gives millions of people and their connection with nature. Yeah. And it's also possibly quite a good outlet for people's hunting instinct that's less damaging and dangerous
because
than other
outlets. Because that's never going to go away, the hunting instinct. No. And that's okay, but also Will was talking about that mental health, PTSD, helping people with mental health. So yes, I am. No, of course, it's so wide ranging. It's not about going out to hook a fish. It's much, much bigger than that.
So,
that was a delicious lunch.
We've come back. We've had a very interesting fish tale where, so Will has baited up a smelt, which is a sea fish. So it's a dead bait in the hope of luring a pike. And then he has left his other rods on the top of the car, so he's gone back to the car to fetch those, leaving. Is that going down again? Oh no.
Fergus is going to take the glory. You're going to take the glory.
Leaving us three
amateurs
to watch the pike float, which is a big, big float on the other side of the canal. And suddenly it disappeared, and there was a grebe fishing around it, so we thought the grebe had eaten the bait. And then it disappeared, and we thought, oh no, it can't possibly be a fish. Annabelle grabbed the rod. There was a fish on the end. Just as you were bringing it in.
I'm not going to talk about it.
Will can't talk about it.
I was saying, you know, I came back and I feel really silly for leaving my rods on top of the car. I mean, what an amateur.
Yeah.
And I said, I was like, oh, you know, don't want to be that guy. Like, you know, I said, should I reel the pike rod in? But that just felt really unfair, and I thought, you know, trust the people you're fishing with.
Oh.
And as I came back, I was expecting some sort of like gag, you know, should have seen the one we caught after so many hours of not catching anything. And
grebes come up right beside the
float. That's exactly what happened before with the grebe.
Yeah.
And that's what we were worried about, weren't we, Jack?
Yeah.
We were worried that the grebe might be sort of nibbling at the float something, and we thought we don't want that to get complicated with the hooking a grebe.
And then the float just went. And
does that ever happen, hooking a bird?
No, I mean, very, very rarely. They know. I think they can sense the metal, the birds.
They've got better eyesight.
Yeah. But yeah, I assumed it was like a gag. And then they were like, no, and they looked quite distraught. And then I looked at the smell, and this smell looked like it had gone through a clothes mangle.
Yeah, definitely been savaged by
something. That is a little bit of an exaggeration.
Yeah.
Oh,
Annabelle is now backtracking hard because she is ultimately responsible for this fish not being good. Because obviously I said, well, what happened? You know, did you guys, when you struck, did you feel it? Oh, hang on, the float's gone, guys.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it has.
Has it?
Yeah.
This could be
there's a fish on, guys.
Okay, on. I've got this one. I've got to hold it.
Okay. Fish Fergus, on. Do you want to come down here, bud?
Yep.
Do you need the net?
Not yet, no. Hopefully.
Can you get it? You get it on.
Yeah.
Will, I think that's the thing, because we need a fish today.
Has it dropped it? Hang on. Has it dropped it? Oh, that was what I mean. That was classic pike behaviour. Just snatched it and was running with it along the shelf. I think it might have dropped it. I'm going to hit it anyway, just because I don't want it to swallow it, just in case.
Oh!
I don't know. Yeah, there you go, Fergus. Okay. This is a good fish, mate.
It's there.
Yeah, got it on?
Okay, yeah.
Keep tense, mate.
Okay. Okay, I've got... this is what a pike feels.
Fergus. Keep the tension on. Reel down, mate. Reel down. Reel the rod tip down.
Okay.
Tension on. Don't lose the tension, mate. Whatever you do, keep the tension on. Reel down towards the float.
Okay.
That's it.
Oh, God, it feels like an absolute...
Chin is on.
This is a big fish, mate.
Oh,
my...
Oh my god, it's enormous!
Oh my god!
It's in.
That's Will's fish.
Yes! Oh my god! You've got a double for your first ever pike, Fergus. This is no jack, man.
Oh my word.
Phone needs to come out. We need to get some photos of this.
Bro!
That is your fish, Will, but mate. I will take some. It felt like
that felt huge,
ton.
Didn't it?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Just.
That was unbelievable.
Look at the size of that beast.
Fergus, we're about to go in after that then.
Oh my word.
Get it!
Oh, I was beginning to doubt myself. Amazing.
I'm shaking. But also because you struck so hard.
Yeah.
And that's a lesson for me. So this is the pike. What do you reckon poundage on that, Will?
12?
12 pound
13,
pike?
13 maybe.
Oh my gosh, she's a strong one.
That's definitely a female.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
This is an amazing fish.
When are we going to put it out of its agony?
Well, we're going to. Will's coming to do that now. I'm shaking.
I'm sure you are, yeah. It's an amazing feeling.
Yeah. The mottling on her body.
Yeah, she's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Wow.
Oh, it's okay. It's all
that
right.
That was a hell of a hit. When you guys were like, oh, is he sure? I was like, can you not see how fast that float is going downstream? Yeah.
So we've got some tools. Right, so now, how do we
deal? Let's talk about the pike. So here we go, Fergus. You've caught. Mate, that is an absolute monster for your first ever pike, man. So I'm just going to very gently, that's the fish. You turn her over like this.
Okay.
Slightly straddle her.
Yeah.
All I'm gonna do. Gosh, she's really fit. I'm gonna slide my fingers in there.
So this is sort of
nice and tight. Have a look where that is.
Yeah.
It's not in a terrible place.
Come around the other side.
Get the forceps. You see in there now?
Yeah, okay. So you are getting your forceps right in there.
Forceps right in. And because we use barbless hooks these days, it's not too much drama. Push that back.
Okay.
That's one out already.
Yeah, great.
It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Gorgeous, eh?
So we've unhooked her
markings
safely.
They're so stunning, those beautiful markings.
So, I mean, you're looking at an apex predator here, and, you know, the reason why they're called the pike, you know, it's a name that was given to this fish in the Middle Ages because of the thrusting spear that the infantrymen of the time would use on horseback. So you can see it's got that really pointed snout, very angular.
Massive tail.
She's an old girl. She's seen many wars.
Oh, look at the top of her fins.
She's been probably otted, I would say.
Oh, really?
Let me guess, at the top.
So yeah,
she's been here a good while. She's got a split fin underneath. But what's amazing about the pike and quite unique about the pike as an ambush predator, you notice how the tail set, everything's set well back. So that fin there, that's actually her dorsal fin, which on
way back.
Conventionally on fish, you would imagine it to be in the middle at the top. But here it's set right at the back just to give her all of that power to come out of the ambush point and smash into the fish and swallow it straight down. And we were talking earlier about the teeth. You saw as I opened her mouth to get those hooks out there.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all of those sets of backward facing teeth. There's a set, you know, almost sort of like canine-like across the jawline. But then inside her mouth, you probably noticed as well, you could see pads of teeth, smaller needle-sharp teeth, all just facing back down that gullet.
That was an incredible lesson in so many ways. A, how to catch them, but also how to look after them. And
I went a bit quiet there because I do take it really seriously, Fergus, eh? And
no, that was
really, you know, if you've never pike fished before but you are into your fishing, I highly, highly recommend that you go with somebody that knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because you just want to make sure that you're protecting the fish as much as possible. Pike have got this reputation, this mythological reputation of being cold-blooded killers. You know, the famous sort of Ted Hughes poem, Pike, the old malevolent smile and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's given it this kind of duck-eating reputation. And, you know, everyone's heard about the little dog that went for a swim in the park pond and never came back. But the truth is, this wild fish is really vulnerable and really, really fragile as
really
well.
Delicate,
you've got to be so careful.
Yeah.
It's remained virtually unchanged since the Cretaceous era.
Really? So it would have swam with the dinosaurs?
Yeah. They reckon they came to the UK about 500 million years ago, but you know the one that swims Aesox lucius that swims up in North America is 80 million years old. And then before that, the actual original pike fish was just a normal fish within the kind of herring salmonid order. And one day it just evolved to have slightly bigger jaws than all the other fishies around, and boom.
And all its fins move backwards.
And all its fins move backwards. And that evolutionary masterstroke has seen this fish through millennia. They're beautiful, big old fish, and I love them so much. And they mean so much to me because of, I think, my childhood being surrounded
in the
by
fens,
pike as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a fish that brings me back that boy-like enthusiasm. Mm. I mean, I think there's nothing like fishing for fish like this.
No, I
think
kind of...
It doesn't matter if it's your first time or your 100,000th time, you still get that feeling of, goodness me,
yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Oh, come on. That's an absolute belter, mate.
Shall I pop her back, or do I...
Use the net.
Use the net, yeah, okay.
Give her a stroke. Give her a little stroke.
I'm not going to kiss her, because she's going to do that to me.
I'm not going
to
kiss her.
Mega. Well done, bud.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Will. Thank you.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. I'm so glad it worked out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's catch Jack and Annabelle one now.
Yes.
Wow. There she goes. Wow, Will.
Cool, eh?
You've done one thing good in your life. You've given me a pike.
Oh, my absolute pleasure, mate. Oh. Doesn't it give you goosebumps, eh?
Yeah, I'm shaking. Shaking.
Oh, brilliant.
She's such a beautiful... I've always had a sort of passion for... fish anyway, and I remember seeing a pike when I was 8 years old in flood water in the sun and just thinking, what an amazing thing. And since then I've always wanted to kind of hold one or get close to one. I don't want to have one in a glass case or anything like that, but just
well,
do you reckon
done,
we could catch another one here?
I think we absolutely could, yeah, definitely. I don't think it would be as big as that one.
No, she's the biggie for this area.
It won't be her, will it? You do say they come back. You often pick them up twice.
Off,
yeah, definitely. You know, you do if they're smaller. Generally, the bigger fish tend to be the queens of their section, you know, and they'll predate, they'll cannibalise smaller pike. That one would think nothing of inhaling a jack.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you never know. You never know.
So a huge thank you to Will Millard for his generous guidance and just a great guy to spend time with. Hope you enjoyed it. For me, it was an incredible encounter that I'll never forget, and a hugely important lesson in what lies under the surface and how to look after them responsibly if you're lucky enough to hook one. Find out more about Will at his website, willmillard.com. I'm also grateful for Jack and his amazing skill at recording all of that quest in very difficult conditions. And of course, to Annabelle for asking the questions I was too excited to ask. And lastly, a huge thank you to Lewis Dobbs back in the studio for producing the finished podcast. And don't forget, we love to receive your emails and social media posts about anything you've discovered on the podcast. You can find us on BBC Countryfile Magazine's Instagram and Facebook pages and Twitter and all that sort of thing. And of course, you can always email me, editor@countryfile.com. And that's the last in the series. Join us next week, though, for another incredible episode. It's the first in the new series. And, well, I won't say any more, but it's truly unmissable. But for now, thank you so much for supporting us and for listening. And goodbye.